Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. There are times when Asif Manvi's interviews for The Daily Show are just plain cringeworthy. Here he is with Don Yelton, former North Carolina GOP precinct chair and member of that state's Republican Party Executive Committee.
But I think I've treated you the same as I would anybody else.
Right.
Matter of fact, one of my best friends is black.
So one of your best friends?
One of my best friends.
Is black?
Yes.
Yelton also complained that only black people can use the N-word and thought it was just fine if the state's mandatory voter ID law, quote, hurts a bunch of lazy blacks, unquote. He was asked to resign the day after that interview ran. It was never Manvi's goal to be a muckraking gotcha journalist. Funny fake reporter is just one of many roles that he's taken on as an actor. But then Manvi has had a number of identities thrust on him since he moved from India to England and then to Florida as a high school junior. He writes about many of them in a new collection of essays called No Land's Man. And Asif Manvi, actor, writer, and The Daily Show's senior Muslim correspondent, senior brown correspondent, senior foreign-looking correspondent. Have I missed any?
I think maybe a senior doctor correspondent.
I think that's that sounds really professional. What could you possibly have been thinking when Don Yelton was talking, you know, about Obama as a witch doctor? And I mean, did you think, okay, this is great comedy? This dude's sinking himself without even knowing it? What?
I think in that moment, you know, you really just want to stay out of the way. The impulse is always to try to, you know, drive the bus somewhere, you know, so you have something in the interview. And then something like that happens where he just starts to speak like that. And then, you know, it reminded me something Stephen Colbert said to me when I first started The Daily Show, which is that when you know, put a camera in someone's face, they get a lobotomy. And I thought to myself, oh, this is happening. And it never had the consequence that it had with Don Yelton, but it has happened in many other interviews. So I knew well enough to just stay out of the way and let him keep going. And I knew that we were getting great stuff. And it's, you know, in spite of all the sort of things he was saying, you know, as a Daily Show reporter, your heart just gets filled up with when that kind of thing happens.
Well, I remember you interviewing a woman who said some, you know, crazy things like, oh God, what was it? Something like a third of Muslims are terrorists.
Yeah, one out of every five Muslim is a terrorist or something like that.
Is it ever infuriating? Do you ever think, I just want to strangle this person?
Right. I mean, you know, there was a string of interviews that I did for a while there where I was talking to a lot of like Muslim haters. And that started to get to me a little bit after a while. And I remember talking to John and just saying like, you know, maybe I'll just go out and talk to somebody, you know, just a regular kind of nut job, you know. And that woman actually that I spoke to in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, she was a particular, very specific kind of crazy. Like she actually... I think I said to her in the interview that, you know, I'm Muslim, and she said something innocuous like, oh, I figured you were. And then we were changing tape and her husband off to the side said, hey, honey, you know, next time he tells you that you're Muslim, maybe you can say not everyone's perfect.
Ooh.
And so she asked us to actually go back and ask her the question again because she thought, oh, this will be really funny. And of course, again, it was a moment where I was just like my heart filled, you know, and I thought this is... She has no idea what she's about to do, you know?
Now, this is a job that you almost didn't take. You write in one of the essays, you were in a funk. You were writing a letter to your ex-girlfriend, recently engaged. When you got the call about auditioning for The Daily Show and you said, well, I'm going to give you the polite version. I'm not talking to them right now. Why?
You know, they called and they said, The Daily Show's looking for a Middle Eastern-looking guy. And I thought, well... This is either the most elaborate Homeland Security sting operation I've ever heard of, or I'm going to end up down at the Daily Show studios, like putting on a fake beard and some sketch and yelling death to America or something like that. So I was like, forget it. I'm not doing that. I'd done these kinds of things before, Letterman and Jimmy Kimmel and, you know, and so I thought I'm not doing it. And so I said no. And then they called back and they said, oh, actually, it's for a correspondent. And they would like you to come down by 3 o'clock. So I literally got down there at 3 o'clock, and then John hired me right there. And then I was on the show that evening. It was on the air later that night. And I didn't have time to tell anybody. And then my phone just started ringing at 11:30 that night, you know. People, did I just see someone who looks very much like you on The Daily Show? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, in the book, we learn a lot about your parents. You know, there are a lot of stories about them. And their response to this offer was, is this John Stewart fellow crazy? What?
Yeah. Well, my dad said, you know, is this John Stewart fellow crazy? How can he hire someone who doesn't even know how to say salam alaikum to be his senior bloody Muslim correspondent? And I said, you know, Dad, it's a comedy show. And he said, I hope it's a comedy show. You know, because I was the last person to represent Islam or Muslims in any way. You know, I've been in more bars than mosques in my life. And so it was kind of bananas for me that I would even be representing in this way, you know. But as I was on The Daily Show and as the years went by, I realized, like, oh, I was able to speak into the zeitgeist in some way, and it was really affecting American Muslims, more than it was affecting policy or lawmakers or the media. It was affecting American Muslims, and they were excited about it. And that sort of, in a weird way, sort of made me feel kind of Muslim-y, you know, and it was very uncomfortable for a while.
Well, and it is making fun of bigotry in so many cases in such a funny way. But this real name-calling, systemic kind of racism has been a big part of your life. Were you aware of, you know, being a Muslim, being an outsider before your family moved from Bombay to England, where, of course, you know, you were the outsider?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, I grew up in the north of England in a city called Bradford, and I grew up there in the 70s. And it was very, you know, there was definitely racism towards people from the subcontinent, Indians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis. And there was, you know, and it was at the time politically in England at that time also. The National Front was very powerful, which is a very sort of conservative political group, which was wanting to get rid of all the foreigners and everything. And so, like, I grew up around that and in the midst of all of that. The interesting thing is, I talk about this in the book as well, like, that the difference between being an immigrant in England versus being an immigrant in the United States is that in England, I always felt like no matter how long you're there and no matter how many roots you plant there, you'll never be completely accepted as truly British. And in America, the opposite seems to be true, where there's a sort of openness and acceptance of immigrants and all that. But on the flip side of that, there's very little curiosity about other cultures and about other places. And Americans sort of, you know, I say that, you know, Americans think about the rest of the world the way New Yorkers think about the rest of America. They don't. And that was very clear to me when I got to America and realized, like, you know, it was either you were either black, you were white, you were Hispanic, or you were invisible, you know?
We're speaking with Asif Manvi, who is an actor who many people may know as from The Daily Show. His new collection of essays is called No Land's Man. Why did your family actually move to the U.S.?
They moved to the U.S. because, well, my dad, he always wanted to move to Canada, actually, and then he found an old college buddy of his who lived in Tampa, Florida. And he was like, Tampa, it's the great American city. It's the city of the future. Come here. So he came out to America on a reconnaissance mission just to check out Florida. And I guess somebody took him out to eat brunch, and he fell in love with the idea of brunch. And I think he thought it was like a third meal. And I have a whole story about it in the book about how he called us from Florida, and he was like, you know, in America, they have this thing, it's called brunch. They have so much food that between breakfast and lunch, they have to stop and eat again. And he thought it was a combination. And he, you know, it was like he got here, and it was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory for my dad, you know. He sort of embraced the consumer culture with an open mouth, you know.
Well, this was in the 1980s. When The Cosby Show was on the air, and you do your own very funny bit from The Daily Show. It's a kind of riff on an integrated family. This is The Cosby Show. That's Q-U-apostrophe-O-S-B-Y.
Someone made snacks for his hardworking kids.
Oh, thanks, Dad. BLT.
Tommy, I made your favorite, baby back ribs. Tommy.
Yeah, Dad?
How many times have I told you not to listen to your iPod while you're doing your homework?
Your father's right, honey.
Yeah, but come on, it's the new Toby Keith album.
Oh, well, why didn't you tell us? What are you hogging it all to yourself for? Turn it off!
So there you are playing the Cosby dad. Tell us about that clip.
Well, we created this parody sitcom based on something that Katie Couric said, where she said, you know, maybe what American Muslims need is what African Americans had in the 80s, which was their own version of a Cosby show. Mm. And maybe that would help with some of the racism and bigotry. And so we took that to its literal extreme, because that's what we do on The Daily Show, and created the Cosby show, Q-U-O-S-B-Y. And it was the all-American Muslim family that we showed it to a panel of New Yorkers, and they thought it was and we presented it like it was a real show, and we wanted to get their opinions, and we got some very interesting and scary responses. I've actually created a web series based on that episode, on that idea of the Cosby Show. It's going to be coming out later in the end of the year early next year.
What kind of faces were you seeing on television when you were growing up? I mean, obviously not any that looked very much like yours.
No, I mean, I decided I wanted to be an actor when I was very young. And, you know, my impression of sort of and I grew up on American pop culture. I grew up on, you know, all the American 70s television shows. And, you know, I used to watch Happy Days, and I used to watch The Fonz. And I remember thinking, you know, that his name was Arthur Fonzarelli, and he was really cool. And so maybe me, with my dorky name, which was Asif Mandviwala, could also be really cool, you know, and I could be the Mons or something. And so I had this image, you know, this kind of image of sort of masculinity, American masculinity, which is sort of, you know, borrowed from James Dean. And then what happens is you're an immigrant kid, like you have that. And then on the other side of it, you have your dad, who's like a shopkeeper and doesn't really know how to navigate the culture or the language. And so you're trying to find that image. And then my mother, actually, when I told her I wanted to be an actor, she suggested that I look at Omar Sharif. And she said, you know, you want to be an actor like Omar Sharif. And I didn't know who Omar Sharif was. And then I saw him, and it was the first time that I saw a brown man in a Hollywood movie, not
Zhivago,
playing a servant or Gunga Din or something, you know. And he was this man. He was a gentleman. And it gave me a possibility because he existed.
And also Michael Jackson, I guess you took on that role. It's a very, very funny story about you bringing the house down at a high school variety show, doing your Michael Jackson impersonation. But I thought even funnier was you rehearsing that for your grandparents. Tell us what happened.
Right, that story is it's about Michael Jackson, but it's also about race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this idea that, like, I decided that I could impersonate Michael Jackson. I realized I could moonwalk and I could sort of sing like him. And I had a jerry curl, and both of us looked like an Indian girl. So, you know, we kind of could match on that level. And so I put together this costume and the thing. And then I, you know, my grandparents were visiting from India. And of course, they had no idea who Michael Jackson is or was. And I'm doing these spins and these things, and I'm falling down. It was very bad. It was not good. And my grandmother, God bless her, she was incredibly supportive. And for months afterwards, she would come into my bedroom and sort of, like, with a cheeky grin on her face, she would always say, "Billy Jesus, not my lawyer." Because that's what she thought the song was.
So many good stories in this book. But, you know, they're so funny, but there's a lot of poignancy here of somebody kind of like viewing the world as, I don't know, the guy who's always had the roles, the names, the epithets kind of thrust upon him. And you even play with that a little bit in your book trailer. You know, you're not quite Muslim enough, you're not quite Indian enough, you're not quite English enough. Is that something you truly struggle with, or does it just make for great comedy?
Well, I think that, you know, look, the title comes exactly from that, the No Lands Man, you know, that sense of belonging nowhere and everywhere. And I think that theme of the outsider, which I think a lot of immigrants can relate to, you know, I had it on different continents. But as an adult, it kind of became my multiplicity has become, I think, in some ways, my power, you know, at least that's how I look at it. And, you know, and especially when I got to The Daily Show, you know, the idea that I could inhabit this voice that was both an outsider and an insider at the same time was incredibly powerful. And I realized that, like, that was the uniqueness of my voice in terms of the of what The Daily Show was able to present. We are who we are, you know, and that was the sort of journey of what happened to me. And but I feel like it kind of shaped me into who I am, and also perhaps, and not perhaps, it has informed the kind of actor that I am as well, you know.
Well, Asif Manvi, a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Asif Manvi, his new collection of essays is called No Land's Man. There's a hilarious book trailer that you can watch, and there's more in the book at wordofmouthradio.org.